Hi, Sandra. Today I'd like to talk a bit about ignoscience. It's like conscience or science or unscience. It's one of those topics in which science is looked at from a different angle. And ignoscience is about the ignorance or the ignoring that science does and the ignorance that science has. And the basic question is, how can we know what we know if we don't know what we don't know? And in the text that I'm writing, which is sort of halfway in the draft phase, I address this misunderstanding of lack of understanding of science. There are a lot of claims, and I consider to be false claims, about what science is and what science does. And a lot of them have become increasingly more, let's say, religious or fundamentalistic, as if science knows what it knows, or if science knows. So there is a lot of pretense that people should comply with what science proposes and presents, and implicitly the claim that science is true and that science is real. And so that is the topic which I would like to unfold in this exploration. On the one hand, it is about science not being real, for the simple reason that the objects of science are linguistic objects, and that means that the objects of science are actually models, they are not real. Science is a description, not a reality. And even if the description of reality helps us, it is no more than a bridge or scaffolding to something which is beyond our grasp, for the simple reason that we do not know what science is founded on. So that brings me to the other part of this exploration, and actually the starting point of this exploration, that science without a foundation is unfounded. So what I explore in this essay is, what is the foundation of science as science knows it? And essentially that boils down to what science calls the axioms. The axioms are held to be fundamental truth, universally valid, but let's question that, because as science say, those axioms cannot be proven. But if they cannot be proven, they cannot be disproven either. And if you have an unprovable or undisprovable foundation of science, then you have no foundation for science. Then you can only say that science is based on an assumption. The assumption might be right, might be wrong. And as long as you cannot go deeper than that assumption, then you cannot have any deeper level of understanding what science is, or what science does, or what science can be, or what science can show. So, in understanding that the axiom is an assumption, then we essentially describe the same as what the theory of relativity said when it said, well, there is an event horizon which limits what we can know. The theory of relativity erroneously assumed that the speed of light was the limit of our realization, or let's call it our realizability. That the speed of light is the limit of what we can know, but that simply postulates that there is a barrier of light which is equivalent to the barrier of sound, just at a higher speed, which is just as the same as a wave, for example, the wave on an ocean. And with the wave on the ocean, we know that the speed at which the wave can travel depends on the depth of the water. So that limiting velocity on water is variable, it depends on the depth, which is essentially what the theory of relativity said. It is dependent on depth or the edge. For the speed of sound, we know the same, that it depends on the density of the medium, how fast things can travel at the speed of sound. But so if we know that that's the case for the waves, which are the foundation of that whole model of, say, the limitation of knowledge and the limitation of science, then we must also apply that to the speed of sound. And we know from the speed of sound the Mach speed, the sonic boom of the airplanes, that it depends again on the conditions of the atmosphere, the air, and wetness, and all that kind of thing, where that speed of sound actually is per medium. And so if that applies to the speed of the waves in a medium, or the speed of sound in the air, then it also applies to the speed of light in the medium. And that is also something that science has discovered, that you can change the medium and then the speed of light just comes down to a crawl of, say, the speed of a moped, which is approximately the speed of a cruiser on the oceans. And so there is that understanding that the speed of light can be much lower than the speed of light as described in, say, the Einstein equations. But on the other hand, once you realize that the speed of light is defined by Einstein's assumption that a light ray is composed of waves of light, light waves, one after the other, and so on, ad infinitum, and then in that approach, at the leading edge of the light ray is where that wave of the specific frequency of light goes through the zero point, because the waves go up and down. The electricity and the magnetism combine in zero points. The waves have wave nodes, just as the violin string on the violin has a clamping on one side, clamping on the other side, and the frequency of the wave is how that string can vibrate between those fixed endpoints. And of course, string theory, superstring theory, field theory, and unified field theory elaborate that theme, that the universe is an ocean of vibrations. In the vibrations, there are zero points, wave nodes, where there is no vibration. And when you look at the atomic model of, say, quantum physics, then they describe that there are orbits of atoms, and that's where the electrons can travel. If you look at it at a deeper level, the electron would be a traveling wave on a standing wave. So the electron dynamic would be a wave upon a wave. And then if you understand the principle of de Broglie, then the orbits of the atoms are a wavelength 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, whole numbers. But that means that the wavelength in between are 1 plus a half, 2 minus a half, 2 plus a half, 3 minus a half, and so on. But in those areas of n plus or minus a half, you then have wave cancellation, which means that in the atomic model, the area of the plus minus a half is actually a wave node, so that the orbits around an atomic nucleus, as quantum mechanics looks at it, would be a circular wave going around the atomic nucleus, but also a wave train as explored by Einstein in what he calls the light ray. But then, with that understanding of waves and wave nodes, defining the speed of light and defining the propagation of light, we can look at that differently if we use the model of tetrionics, because in tetrionics it is clear that the wave train or the light ray, which is just different words for the same, is not just one wave after the other and so on ad infinitum, with a leading end where you then need to look how does that wave propagate into the unknown. And it is the unknown that we are talking about now. So in that sense, we are looking at the edge of the unknown, not from classical theory, because it just ignored the unknown, but in relativistic theory, because it said that the event horizon is the edge of the unknown. But then, according to the relativistic theory, that edge of the unknown would be defined by the wave in the ray of light. But Tetrionic says it is not a wave within a ray of light, but the wave also has the wave envelopes. So in the ray of light, and Tetrionic has a beautiful representation for that, all of the waves are connected up, but the whole light ray itself is also a wave, because you have the wavelength 1, but then you also have the wavelength 2, the wavelength 3, the wavelength 4, up to the wavelength, all of the number of the waves together. So the light ray is actually, say, a holographic field of vibrations, interlocked, interlinked, in which every wave has the wave harmonic. So not just the wave of wavelength 1, which is the one Einstein looked at, but also wavelength 2, wavelength 3, wavelength 4, and so on. Spanning the whole wave, and these wave envelopes, they together redefine the crossing points of the wave nodes. So where Einstein sort of had the edge, the leading edge, the wave node of the ray of light stopping and having to unfold with the magnetic wave and the electric wave extending from that leading edge of the wave node. In Tetrionics, you can see that it's not just that specific wavelength that propagates, but also double the wavelength, triple the wavelength, and actually the whole length of the light ray as the wavelength. And that's where Tetrionics then says, on the one hand, that the speed of light is not defined by that single wave which Einstein looked at, but you need to include all of the other waves, the wave envelopes, and then the wavelength as a whole is actually a solitone. But if it is a solitone, which is waves plus wave envelopes creating a total integrated wave harmonic field, that is like any solitone, a wave which can propagate itself in space while maintaining its form. And Tetrionics actually shows that this explains the Young double slit experiment, because if you have only one slit, then by having the wave go through that, it essentially strips the wave envelopes from the wave in the wave train, and then you get a distorted image of what the wave solitone actually is. If you have more than one slit, then the wave envelopes can pass their signal through that tool, and they can reconstitute the wave field. You can redetect that on the other side as a holographic phase coherent field. So with that understanding, we can then make a shift from the relativistic view on the event horizon to a quantum probabilistic view on the event horizon, because where Einstein, with his limited model of the wave train in the ray of light, then in quantum mechanics, we can see that the event horizon is actually not a limitation of what we know, that is the frontier of our ignorance. It is the boundary between what we do know and what we do not know. So Einstein defined implicitly that what we do know is limited by the speed of light. But that also means that what we don't know is at the other side of that speed of light. Bill Tiller had already said two things which are relevant for this story. On the one hand, he said that the crossing point of the electric wave and the magnetic wave is not in the zero point as the theory describes it, but that the zero point can fluctuate, literally that's part of the quantum fluctuation, in the light field, in the unified field, in the wave field, depending on what's going on around it. That fluctuation, which Bill Tiller described, is not just in that one wave node, but it is in all of the wave nodes in the wave train. But with the tetrionic understanding that there is wave higher harmonics, which operate as wave nodes, stabilizers, because they are the wave envelopes which go through the same zero point. So they recalibrate and they restabilize the zero points at every level of the wave train, at every level in the soliton. So with that understanding of Bill Tiller, that means that the stability of the wave nodes in the wave train are multiply defined by the wave envelopes. And then that fluctuation or the fluctuability of the wave nodes in that ray of light becomes less. And that's precisely what tetrionic says, that the whole ray of light then operates as a Tesla wave, which means that what happens at the one end of the wave is also what happens at the other end of the wave, for the simple reason that the ray of light is a soliton, and the node at the beginning is connected to the node at the end, because all of these wave envelopes interlocking, interlinking with each other, defining a holographic phase coherence at multiple levels. Now I come to the other fundamental insight that Bill Tiller gave me, which is where he said that at the speed of light, at the limiting edge, as Einstein postulated it, and people just blindly assumed it and took that over. Bill Tiller said, well, actually, if you look in what happens and realize that if you go into that speed of light, then according to the Einstein equation, the closer you get to the speed of light, the more energy you need to do so. Actually, if you look at it from the perspective of tetrionics, there is a different thing that goes on, because it basically means that the closer you get to the speed of light, the leading end of the wave ray, then you find that it's not just that wave coming together there, but the second order harmonic, the double wavelength wave comes there too, the triple wavelength comes there too, the quadruple, the quintuple, and so on, until the whole wavelength. So all of these waves come together there, and the energy is actually not determined by the light ray, but by the envelopes of the light ray, more specifically of the soliton. But the soliton is also definable as the point in a boundary where the boundary turns inside out on itself. So that is where we can then connect that up to the four-dimensional dynamic logic, that a boundary is defined by a phase reflection, a field is defined by the lack of phase reflection, and a filter is defined by a partial phase reflection and phase propagation. So that in essence, the boundary is a location of change of phase. And connecting that back to tetrionics, the change of phase is exactly what tetrionics defines as a quantum. The quantum is an electric charge, plus and minus, depending on how you look at it, which is in motion and has a linear flux. It is electromagnetic, so as it moves forward, it trails a magnetic wake behind it. And as a result, that invokes a current which rotates according to the right-hand rule associated with the quantum. So the quantum is then a charge in motion, which is electric, and it is magnetic. and it has an internal structure of cohesion. So with that tetrion, we can then describe that that is the quantum change which is also at the foundation of the creation or elimination of any boundary in the universe, because a boundary is a place where the phase reflects. The field is where there is no phase reflection, as I mentioned before. But then in tetrionics, we can just redefine that any boundary or any wave or any interface, any edge in the universe is simply a plane where the phase change can bounce back on itself. And in that sense, a boundary is just a larger version of a quantum change in quantum space as defined by tetrionics. And then if you look at the edge of the light ray, then as Bill Taylor said, when you go into that light ray, once you understand that this is where the electric and the magnetic go through their zero point, and if you then calculate what goes on, and Bill Taylor did that. And so he took the information of Einstein, and then he said, well, just let's just assume that you could go through this infinity point where Einstein says you cannot get there. And Taylor said, let's just assume that we got there and that we are beyond that. And then you can invert the equation, and then you can see that all the energy that you needed to pump into the system to go through that barrier of light is what you get back at the other side of it. So that means that the barrier of light is not something that limits our reality, but in order to get out of that out of that reality, let's call it the known, into the unknown, you need to somehow resolve that ad infinitum, which is implied in the Einstein equation. And once you connect that to the understanding of tetrionics, then you can see that the ad infinitum is not infinite. The ad infinitum is simply the total length in fundamental waves, say in quantum changes, of the whole length of that light ray. But that makes that light ray limited. It doesn't make it infinite. It means that when you go into that transition at the leading edge of the ray of light, and the magnetic and the electric invert, so the electric goes back to the zero point and inverts, the magnetic goes back to the zero point and inverts, that zero point is connected to all of the other zero points of the whole light ray with all of their wave envelopes. And as tetrionics says, that is actually a Tesla wave, then that means that it will simply invert by that zero point, for the simple reason that the electric and the magnetic wave have that property. The quantum change in the one wave connects up to the quantum change which will create the next wave of that light ray. And in the same way that a Newton pendulum moves by a marble hitting a row of marbles hung on threads from the one end, and then as that marble hits that whole row of marbles, then the marble at the far end bounces off and all of the rest of the marbles stay in place. So a light ray, when it propagates, it simply has one quantum moving forward on the one side and one quantum folding up internally back on the other side. And that folding up takes place via those wave envelopes which span the whole length of the light ray. So that's how the soliton can move and maintain its own coherence. So with that understanding, then what Bill Taylor says is simply logical, because at the moment that the light ray goes into that zero point, it folds itself inside out through that zero point. The boundary turns inside out on itself, which is this, what the singularity does, unfolds at the other side and extends forward. And as Bill Tillard said, all of the energy that you put in comes back out for the simple reason that the wave plus the wave envelope simply continues traveling. So the assumption of Albert Einstein that reality ends there is incomplete. With the understanding of Bill Tiller, we can then say the whole wave envelope simply does the thing that the singularity does. That is where the wave turns inside out on itself. And then we can connect that to what quantum mechanics says, that at the moment that you are looking at the manifestation of reality, then at its foundation you can see that it has to do with the propagation of an electron from one orbit to another. And with the Broglie view of the atomic orbits, you can see that yes, there are orbits around this nucleus as quantum mechanics erroneously postulated. And then you will also have a series of waves radiating out from the center. But that means that these atomic orbits are merely the equivalent of what happens when you drop a drop of water onto a flat water surface. You get these rings of waves expanding out. And in that perspective, the atomic orbits are simply a standing wave around the wave nucleus, in which the wave traveling, the traveling wave on the standing wave of the wave orbit, can move from one orbit to the other. And that is then the equivalent of a quantum leap, as quantum mechanics then describes it. The quantum leap is the equivalent of going from one side of the barrier of light to the other side of the barrier of light. And now we come to the whole reason why I formulated all of this, of the waves, the sound waves, the light waves, because now we can see that we are actually talking about a wave or a limit of consciousness. And one can understand that consciousness is exactly as the light ray of Einstein combined with the quantum leap of Max Planck, and that a change of consciousness is actually when we extend from one side of the limit of our knowledge to the other side of the limit of our knowledge. And what I have described now is the edge of our knowing, and also the transition into the edge of the unknowing. And then we can see that the limit which was assumed by Einstein and then became imposed by other people is not a real limit, because from that perspective of having waves in a ray of light going into an endpoint, a zero point, as the Einstein model has it, then the Planck model shows that that wave node is just part of another wave node at the one wave further on. In quantum mechanics, that is described as one orbit going next to the over to the next orbit in the orbital system of the atoms, as that wave model has it. And that means that we have an understanding of how that edge of our understanding is very well defined in relativity theory by quantum mechanics, for the simple reason that the edge of what we know is simply a wave node, and all we need to do is take that quantum leap and know that the soliton will travel onward and make that quantum leap and will edge us on to the next wave and all of the wave harmonics. So in that sense, we then have the understanding of what the event horizon is, and also the understanding of how the event horizon moves onward, quantum leap by quantum leap. And that with the understanding that this is a representation of our leading edge of consciousness, we can then also understand that that is where we change our involvement, and that with the change of involvement, we end up in a different perspective on reality, because we are just a wave note further. We are quantum leap yonder. And that is also how we then, in our realizations, shift our perspective. And that is what science has been doing. So science has been applying this all the time. It changed its involvement from classical science, pretending to be outsiders, uninvolved, playing God, to relativistic scientists, knowing that there are limits to what we can know, but not looking at the limits of what we don't know. Then quantum mechanics, which says that we can actually look at that limit and realize that in that limit we need to turn things inside out, upside down. Now we need to let go of the coherence that we know, let it dissolve into not the wave pattern that we know, but in the electric and the magnetic going out in ways that we don't know, to discover that they come back in exactly the way that we do know, that they will create a new wave in that wave field. So that the propagation of the wave field is simply the extension of that wave field, and coming back to tetrionics, that is precisely the model of the light ray of tetrionics with all its wave envelopes, which together creates a soliton wave which functions as a singularity. But that means that the propagation of science is by the principle of relativity theory, that there is a wave traveling along. By the principle of quantum mechanics, that wave turns around in the leading trailing edge of the wave node and inverts of it on itself. And that is where we can then bring everything back to what tetrionics describes, that inverting of the wave on itself in the zero point is exactly the formulation of the foundation of tetrionics, which is that of phase change in the quantum fluctuation universe. So I can then put these things together, that the edge of what we know and the edge of what we don't know becomes accessible. So this is where I can change from a recapitulation of what science has found, now put in a perspective of what tetrionics has used to integrate the findings of science. And tetrionics simply says that what science found, which is that matter is based on molecules, based on atoms, which are based on quantum change, we can then reconstitute as a bottom-up formulation of the manifestation of the universe. So tetrionics, in 6 handbooks, which are free to download, shows that if you look at quantum change from that perspective, then you have a quantum universe of vibrations. The smallest element of that vibrational universe is the quantum change. Tetrionics shows that to be an electric charge inverting on itself. When that charge inverts on itself, it immediately creates a magnetic trail. That magnetic trail extends it from a linear to a flat dynamic. That has an associated vortex dynamic, and then the universe is built up out of that. But if the universe is built up out of that, then our consciousness is built up out of that. If the coherence of the universe is based on that, then the coherence of what we of our consciousness is based on that. So then we suddenly have a different way to look at what we know and what we don't know, because what we know is simply a pattern of coherence in our mind, in our consciousness, which operates at different levels. And that consciousness, which in us operates at different levels, which we call the out-of-conscious, which is essentially the universal vibration of the quantum domain, which is a domain of phase information, which is a space of consciousness. As Roger says, it's domain of love, because all of these fluctuations are connected to each other. And then we can also see that these fluctuations can make ripples within themselves. They also can create curdled ripples on themselves, what tetrion is called the tetrions. So in tetrionics, you can then see that a cohesion is created in the quantum domain, which we experience as the creation of the atoms, all of the atomic particles, the pluses, the minuses, the zeros, which are actually based on the subatomic particles, which tetrionics calls the particle zoo. And tetrionics shows that from that particle zoos, the pluses, the minuses, and the zeros, the protons, the neutrons, and the electrons are actually the foundation of the materialization of the universe. The protons and the neutrons can stick together, having a space of the for the electron to be locked into them, from which it can be released. So tetrionics then shows that atoms are actually not clouds of electrons around protons and neutrons stuck together, but tetrionics shows that protons and neutrons are stuck together in a very exact way. Electrons can be caught up in that in a very precise manner. And then with the model of tetrionics, you can see that the electron orbits are actually niches in clusters of protons and neutrons, which tetrionics calls deuterons, and that these deuterons can be stacked by next to each other, on top of each other, in a kind of double pyramidal organization. And in that, the locations of the electrons in their niches are exactly those which have been measured as the Bohr radii of quantum mechanics. So then we can see that quantum mechanics is precisely defined by this model of tetrionics. The energies in it is precisely defined by the geometry of that tetrionic field of cohesion. And so you don't have to calculate the Schrödinger numbers because they actually follow from the geometry. And that means that everything we know of the physical reality is based on protons and neutrons combined as deuterons with electrons, and then those define the atoms. The electron cloud, which the alchemist called the air element, can then cause a condensation of the atoms into molecules, which the alchemist called the water element, because that's where in the molecules there is not an electron cloud, but electron current, an electron flow, an electron circulation, like water. And then these molecules can be stuck together by the circulation becoming a resonance, which is then what the alchemist called the earth element, where the flow of the water, let's say, freezes in what's called the bound electrons. And that means that in tetrionics we can see how the quantum change can lead to an electron change, which can lead to a molecular change. The electron change in the atoms can cause a molecular change, can create a material change. But that what we then see in the material, as described by tetrionics, we can also understand to be taking place within us, in which we have quantum field cohesion in the quantum field within us. And that is where we can then see that we can within us store, replicate, interact, and play with quantum field cohesion at different levels. But that quantum field cohesion, we can now understand in what I was described before as these light rays as described by Einstein, which we can then connect with what Max Planck said, that in these zero points you can go from one orbit to another, you can go from one wave to the other. As Bill Tiller said, that simply means that the energy which was in there comes back at the other end. So it doesn't need an infinite energy change, it is simply the propagation of that light ray, which, as tetrionics says, includes all of the wave envelope, so it propagates as a soliton. So the universe is a hologram, and that means that this propagation of the waves in the hologram is not at the speed of light as defined by Einstein, but it is the speed of light of the wave group as described by Gilles Nibar. So that is at a much higher velocity than that which Einstein assumed. And then with what Tetrionix adds, it is actually a soliton, which means that it goes at, let's say, infinite speed, which is not infinite, but which is simply the speed of the wave group, of the wave envelope of the soliton. And that is for anybody who is in that light field instantaneous. Because if you're surfing the wave, then that means that whenever the wave propagates, you're there already because you're surfing the wave. And that's not just as Einstein assumed for the wave at that frequency that he was looking at, but also at the double wavelength, the triple wavelength, and so on. And that means that it is at the speed of propagation of the whole soliton. So now, coming back to that edge of our knowing and the edge of the unknowing, that means that we are serving the knowledge that we have and then extend that into the knowledge that we do not have, and as a result are able to go to larger levels of cohesion, which is also more encompassing levels of understanding. And that is what we experience when we sleep at night. We shift from the beta brainwaves of what we perceive in our environment to the alpha brainwaves, which is associated with the, say, the hologram or the soliton of our body as a whole, which is based on the wavelength of the organs interacting with each other and each having their own hologram, which the Chinese call the Shen, and all of these holograms being calibrated amongst each other in a fluctuation which the Chinese medicine calls the Qi. So that at that level, which is then called the theta brainwave level, we are functioning at a level where the organs connect and interconnect with the creation and the manifestation and materialization of the universe as a whole. Because that's what the organs do. They maintain the quality of the blood, they maintain the cohesion of the body cells, and as a result they maintain the cohesion of the body as a whole as it is produced, let's say printed out by the cells. And that is also where the classic Greeks and Romans called that the gods of the Olympus, because the theta brainwave frequency is where the body reconstitutes itself, which Humberto Matarana called the autopoiesis. The same way as the soliton light ray reconstitutes itself, the body as a whole reconstitutes itself, because the body is a hologram too. And the organs are simply the different frequencies of the light ray of the hologram body. And so when the body turns in over on itself, that's what we then experience in the theta brainwave frequencies, which is also the connected to the Schumann brainwave frequency, which is the frequency of the standing wave of the Earth. It's the rhythm, the pulse of the planet, let's say the metronome or the tuning fork of the planet in our body, as a result of which our body organs can create their coherence. But the body organs don't only digest our food, they also digest our information. So at the theta brainwave frequency, we are then interacting with that process of the maintenance of cohesion of our consciousness. So that third level of consciousness, having gone from beta brainwaves in the outside world to the alpha brainwave, the body dream world, to the theta brainwave, the organs composing, recomposing, decomposing the body. Then in the sleep cycle, we go to the deeper level, the level of the delta brainwaves, the fourth level of consciousness. And so then we can see that these four levels of consciousness are interwoven with each other and based on the consciousness at the cellular level, where the cell is actually, as is the case for the first cell, the universe in inverse. But that means that our consciousness is based on these four levels of the beta, the alpha, the theta, and the delta brainwave frequencies. But that is like the wave envelopes which constitute the hologram of the universe as we seem to experience it. So what we experience as the four levels of the sleep cycle are the four levels of consciousness, but they're connected to the cells forming the organs, forming the body in our environment. So basically that means that the cell is the one wavelength, the organ is the wave envelope, the body is the wave train, and together they form the solitone of your being, conscious being in the universe. So in our conscious being, we actually live and experience that same dynamic of the universe as a whole. And in our consciousness, we switch between these four levels in the sleep cycle, but that doesn't mean that they're separate gears of reality, as if they're separate gears in a car. It simply means that, just as we see in the organs in the five element cycle of Chinese and Indian medicine, all of these organs are active all of the time, but same as an electron, as a traveling wave on the standing wave of the electron orbit, in the consensus model of science, the organ which is dominant at that time is carrying the wave forward between all of the organs, and all of the organs together are actually integrated by the blood circulation. All of the organs are different filters, or different pumps, or different actuators, or different vortices, chakras, on the blood circulation system. And the blood circulation system is the counterpart of, say, the snake in the Garden of Eden. The snake, the Ouroboros, the ongoing circulation, is the blood circulation. The organs in our body are the pumps, the filters, which maintain that autopoiesis. And all of these organs have their own hologram, their own Shen. All of them together have their Shen as well. So all of the organs are one organ. The body as a whole is an organ. And all of these organs with their vibrations are part of that hologram of the body as a whole. So then we can switch from looking at the organs as physical organs to the organs being metaphysical organs. Then the organs are actually forms of consciousness composed by the cells for the purpose of filtering a specific aspect of the universe as a whole, so that our body is comparable to a Newton spectrum by which the white light can be seen to be unfolded as the rainbow. That's also where the Vikings talk about the rainbow bridge, or the dancer on the rainbow bridge. So we are the dancer on the rainbow bridge, because we as a body are based on these organs, which each have a different frequency or aspect in that blood circulation. Together they form the whole circulation, and each of them has a different segment of the total cycle, which you would call a different frequency in the spectrum of what the body does. So in the Newton's spectrum, you would say that every organ has a different color. That's also what Chinese and Indian medicine describes, that together they span the whole range of the prism, creating the white light. And together they create a whole solitone of the body turning inside out on itself. But that is not just for the physical body, because we now know through tetrionics that the the material is just the molecular, which is based on the atomic, which is based on the frequencies in the quantum field. So then we know that the everything that has been formed in the material body is simply a condensation and a concentration of shock waves leading to traveling waves, leading to standing waves, which we then experience as electron leaps, resulting in electron currents in molecules, resulting in bound electrons in materials. But those materials are there because that quantum field became a standing wave out of a traveling wave, out of a shock wave. So if you look at it in the terminology of the geometry of tetrionics, then you can see that shock waves can connect up to each other, forming circuits, triangles or circulations, which are the basis of a time base, time frequency. So at the moment that waves connect up in a triangle, they also create a time domain, a traveling wave. And then when they lock up again, they can form a tetrahedral shape, which is a standing wave, and our body is just that. And that's where we can then connect, say, the particle view and the wave view, that our body is the material manifestation of the quantum phase field in its resonance, in the same way that the wave can become the wave train with the wave envelope forming the soliton. Our body is simply a soliton, a hologram, which is composed out of these cells forming the organs, forming the body materials, forming the biocommunication cells and all that. So the anatomy is the consequence of the physiology, which is the consequence of the cells doing their things in unison, in the system regulation, which operates in the electromagnetic domain of a hologram, because our body is a hologram within the universal hologram. So then we can move to that description in terms of what we know to the description of what we don't know. So having first talked about essentially the building up of the ray of light to a hologram, we have now taken that a step further to the understanding that our body is a hologram composed out of cells, being the equivalent of the wave in the wave train. The cells then create the organs, which is like a wave envelope. They create the body, which is like a hologram or a soliton, and that in that sense, the body is the material form of a field of consciousness in vibration. And then we can make that transition from that what we know to what we do not know, and essentially also make the transition from material science to immaterial science, which is the transition from physics to phasics. We know that physics is bound electrons. Physics is based on chemistry, which is an electron flow. Chemistry is based on electromagnetism, which is electron leaps in atoms. But that is based on quantum change. So we know that physics is based on chemistry, which is based on electromagnetism, magnetism, which is based on quantum change in the quantum field, which is pure phase change, that's an information field. So we already know that everything physical is physical, and we already thus know that everything that we know, which science looked at as the physical, which they can measure, which they can weigh, which they can determine, and so on, that is actually just a three-dimensional printout, just as our body is a three-dimensional printout. The anatomy is the consequence of the physiology. Physical reality is part of the chemical dynamic which created the process. And as I described it before, science looks at the material, religion looks at the process level and calls that God. That is the generation and operation and destruction of the molecular cohesion, which is based on the electron leaps in the atomics, which is the identification and disidentification of the electron with the atom, which is also the identification and disidentification of the electrical with respect to the magnetic, which is the connection between the physical and the physical. So we then at that level can see that everything material is simply a three-dimensional printout resulting from a process, which is a propagation wave, resulting from a shock wave in the electromagnetic, which is where things go from the tangible to the intangible back again, which originates from the phase space, the quantum phase space as described by Tetrionics. So then we can say that everything we know is based on the unknown. And now we come to the crux of the matter of this whole foundation of igno science, that every description of science is a formulation of a realization. Science does not describe a reality, it makes a model of reality. Science does not define reality, science simply describes how we realize it. So the description of science needs to be understood always as a formulation of our realization. And then we can make the transition from material science, which they call objective science. Remember that the object of science is a linguistic object, it is a model, it doesn't exist. And in that sense, we already see that objective science is actually subjective sciencing, because the reality that science looks at is actually the realization that the scientist had. And they talk with each other and they come to a consensus about it. That doesn't mean that when they consensus about it, that is true. It simply means that they like to agree with that, about that with each other, for the simple reason that the other things that the other people see, they cannot see yet, or they cannot see yet how the others can see that. But that's precisely where we have that edge between what we know and what we do not know. It's not just individually that there are things that we know and what we don't know. It's also collectively that we have things that we know or agree upon and things that we don't know or don't agree upon. And that's where science has to be the leading edge of knowing that if we don't agree on something, that we don't have to have war because we disagree, because only idiots do that, because idiots, from the Greek word idios, is somebody who cannot look beyond what they know. But an idiot at some point learns that there are things that they don't know. The baby grows up, becomes a child, and realizes that there are things which are different. The one parent does something else than the other parent. Then at some point the child becomes an adolescent and realizes what they do is different from what other people do. And at some point the adolescent becomes an adult and realizes that it's okay that other people do things differently. And it's okay for the other scientists to see things differently. And that is not a reason for war, but a reason for appreciation, validation, verification, that how is it possible that the other sees something that you do not see? How can it be that the other can know what for you is unknown? How can it be that that other scientist has gone beyond that edge of consciousness and sees that there is something else? And that is where people have blinded themselves by their blind spots, by their reflexes, by their beliefs, by the black holes that they created within themselves. That's where they deny things and as a result fixate things. That's where they go into this wave node, that they do not see the wave, but they are in that zero point of realization, that they are not involved in what is there, but they're at a turning point of seeing that there might be something else there, but they just don't know it yet. So that where science talks about black holes and then pretends that it is something that exists, That's nonsensical because the black hole is simply one side of the vortex and the other side of the vortex is a white source. So looking only at one side is the same as Einstein saying there is an edge of what we can know without realizing that Max Planck has already explained that at the other side of what you know, there is something you don't know. So simply take that quantum leap, realize the black hole is the white source, and that your denial is somebody else's realization, and that actually the realization of the other is where we have that progress of science. So when you have people who say that things are unscientific, those are the fundamentalists who say that if it is written down, it is true, but they no longer know why it was accepted to be true, how somebody saw something, how other people agreed on that, but then as a result you cannot conclude that it is just that what there is. Just as the airplane could fly at the speed of sound and then crashed out of the universe, so the fundamentalist at that edge of realization will crash out of the universe, will have to crack out of the egg of understanding and misunderstanding, and step out of the limitation of the blind spot, the reflex, the convictions, and the limited realization, go beyond puberty and realize that the other people are right too. It's not that you are right and somebody else is wrong, or that you are wrong because somebody else is right, but there are simply complementary perspectives, and if you complement them, they can complete each other, like the pieces of the puzzle connecting up, or like the waves on the one side of the wave node connecting up to the other side of the wave node, exactly as Tetrionic said. Einstein looked at the waves, Planck looked at the waves node, combined the two, and you understand Tetrionics. You understand that in the wave node, things are not lost. There are no endings of the universe, there's just new beginnings. The death on the one side is the birth on the other side. And so what we're talking with here is that everything science knows is simply a metaphor by looking in the rearview mirror of the process of creation. The process of creation is at its foundation tetrionic quantum field fluctuation, with shock waves, traveling waves, standing waves in the atomic, in the molecular, into the material. So the material is simply the image that was projected on the screen of the process of creation. Now, at the lower level, it is the dynamic of creation which the religions look at, that these wave fronts can connect up and the waves can be generated, operated, and destroyed, but that this process is meaningful only because there is an connection to other waves and other wave fronts, so that the material domain that we see is simply an equivalent or an inside out or a solidified reflection of how consciousness works. So when we look at consciousness as a materialization, which classical relativistic and quantum mechanics did, then we are looking in the rearview mirror, and Tetrion describes precisely how that materialization of the universe works, and how the science of dead matter now has a workable and working foundation. But it also means, as the science of life then postulates, that this quantum change is actually the freedom of choice, and in the freedom of choice we actually experience and operate changes in consciousness. And then we can understand these changes in consciousness from looking at what material science has described. Everything we know is a representation of our knowing. And the only thing we need to do is realize that science is the result of sciencing, that the sciencing does not take place in the group of scientists, but in individual scientists, and that that scientist or that discovering, that getting the new known out of the unknown, doesn't only happen in scientists, but happens in everybody. The scientists simply exemplify how that process worked by making it more explicit. And that's also what the mystics do, and what the mystery schools train, that if you see that our reality comes from our realization, that the realization comes from our shift in consciousness, and that the shift in consciousness comes from realizing that the boundary of consciousness is simply the same as that of the speed of light, which is the same as that of the speed of sound, which is the same as that of a boundary propagating through the universe, a wave propagating through the universe, then we can understand that the known is simply the pattern of waves that has emerged out of the dynamic of, let's say, the waving of the wave field at the tautomeric domain. So then we can turn everything around and realize that all of the known is simply a crystallization of the unknown, that the known in all its varied forms simply shows that there are all these varied forms in the unknown, and that the holograms that we see as tangible objects in what's called reality are holograms in our mind, in our realizations. So what is necessary, and mystery school trainings are about that, and the fundamental philosophies are all about that. Reality as such is not real. That is what Schrödinger tried to explain with his model of the Schrödinger cat. That what we consider to be real is only real because we hold it to be real, because we identify with it. We fix that as a reality because we fixate an idea, an ideal within us. So by creating a conviction, we tune into that specific frequency, we serve that wave, and then hold that to be real. But at the moment that you would turn around on that wave and try to surf on the other side of the wave, you would realize that you would simply sink into the ocean. And in that sense, well, you also see that, of course, when the wave crashes on the shore, I will carry you no further. So the edge of consciousness is basically that edge where this wave can no longer carry you, because either the wave crashes or you turn over on the other side of the wave cannot carry you, and you sink into the water. So when we identify with the conviction, we lock into that specific hologram of the physical reality as a tangible or manifest realization, which then fixates our consciousness, and that is what we perceive to be real. Schrödinger described that as a Schrödinger cat in a kind of metaphor, but by reformulating it as a hologram that you tune into, so that you tune in to or resonate to a physical hologram in the environment, might be more helpful to understand how that dynamic of consciousnessing works. And then you can also see that you have that flexibility. You can tune in and out of reality in the same way that you can tune in and out of consciousness, which is what we do when we shift from beta brainwaves identifying with the outside world to alpha brainwaves identifying with the dream world, which is the body processing dynamic, to identifying with the theta brainwaves, which is the organ dynamic with all of the organs together forming one organ, which is that pulsation of the body turning inside out of on itself, which is also the autopoiesis, defining the homeostasis of the body, because that's the level where the body health and healing is defined in resonance with the Schumann wave of the earth. And we can also tune into the delta brainwaves of the cell, which is the, what the shamans call the portal of death, but which is also the transition in the out of conscious, where we go from the environment to the body, to the organs, to the cell, out through the cell into the universe as a whole, and then can be anywhere in the universe as a whole, because we no longer fixate our identification with the environment, beta brainwaves, or with the body, alpha brainwaves, or with the organic, the emotional, the information processing, the processing of the pain, the processing of the fear, the processing of the despondency, of depression, which is simply the pulsations in the organic level of the body in what it does. But that we go to this other level, this deeper level of being in the universe as a whole, and that is where we then can experience that knowledge and knowing are different things. That knowledge is simply a crystallization, a fossilization, or a printout of the process of knowing, in the same way that our cells printed our body. So we print knowledge, or we print science, we print belief, we print reality. But that is simply a printout of something which is at a much deeper level, and also much larger, because it is still an ongoing process. So reality is just the glitter on the crest of the wave on the ocean. And so when we identify with that, we will see that it keeps on changing, as science had to change from classical science to relativistic science to quantum mechanical science to now tetrionic science. And in tetrionic science, we can see that the material is actually a crystallization, a manifestation, materialization of quantum field dynamics. But we experience that within us. And so when we can identify with knowledge, how we can identify with knowing, we can surf the waves or swim in the waves, and then we can identify with the getting to know, which is what the biblical terminology of be like little children, otherwise you cannot enter into paradise, which in the East they call beginner's mind, which is the mind that we all have as a baby, that we have the process of consciousness operating and acting without that reservoir of pebbles which we collected in what we can call the memory box. And then when people grow up, they compare everything to the pebbles in that memory box, while a baby doesn't do that. It just knows it as it is. And that is where we can then have that transition from knowledge to knowing to getting to know, which is what the baby does, because the baby is immersed in that field of consciousness still. So then at the core of this essay is that we are part of that field of universal consciousness. We can experience everything, because at the cellular level we are the universe in inverse, and that quantum fluctuation field, that hologram of waves and wave envelopes in a wave train forming a wave soliton, is what the universe is. We are part of it, we can experience within us, but at the moment that we identify with it as protons, neutrons, and electrons, then we are zooming in on a more limited version of that. Then in a way we identify with the material aspect of the quantum field. And when we identify only with the molecular part of that, the cohesion of atoms in specific forms, then we identify with the process of, say, Earth and the manifestation or materialization of Earth over the eons and over the ages, which is the process of creation on Earth. And when we identify only with the manifestation of the moment, then that is what we will experience as the so-called reality that is. And when people get trapped or stuck in that reality, they might get the belief that the reality that is all that is. and they no longer can see that the reality that is an ongoing process. Science actually discovered that it is an ongoing process, going from determinism to relativity to probability to integrated or unified science. So that is that transition from the knowing to the unknowing. In that sense, this whole essay is about the capacity to realize that the known is simply the momentary presentation of things as they are. If we look beyond that, as Zen and all of the fundamental philosophies say, do not look at what is, but look at how it came to be. That's not history and people doing things. That's about the natural processes, forming mountains, carved by rivers, making space for forest, leaving space for deserts, and so on. And then the things that are can be seen as things that are in ongoing becoming, and that we are in ongoing becoming, and that our knowing is in ongoing becoming. It's not about knowledge, but it is about knowing and knowing our knowing. And then we can go to that deeper level that is not just the planet that is in becoming, but the universe is ongoing becoming. The solar system travels at immense speeds throughout the galaxies. And so we are getting in touch with our knowledge propagating into spaces where we haven't been yet with our solar system. So that is where our knowledge, having dissolved into knowing, then dissolves in the knowing of the unknowing. And that the knowing of the unknowing is where the baby is capable of learning so quickly and so much in just 1 year. So much falls in place because there is no reference system to hang on to. And so the mystery schools are all about getting back to that level of knowing in unknowing, so that from there it is possible to go back to unknowing. And that is the whole purpose of defining ignoscience, or the science of ignorance, or the science of innocence. At the moment that we realize that everything we know is embedded in what we don't know, then we can look at the limit of what we do not know. Once we look at that limit, we can, and that was the beginning part of the story, realize that that limit keeps on moving, because if we change our perspective, that limit will move. As we take a step forward, even if it is only a quantum leap, then our horizon will move along with us. The event horizon is traveling along with us. And the more we realize that we are not our anatomy, the more become aware that we are philosophy of physiology, then we see that our life is not in the moment, but in our whole lifetime. Then the more we realize that our physiology is actually connected to our regulatory system, and that we are connected to everything around us, we are connected to the planet, we are connected to others, we are connected to all life forms, then in our knowing we realize that the knowing of others complement us and completes us, and that we are just cells in the body of humanity, and the body of humanity has much more knowing and much more knowledge than we have. And we can dissolve into that larger knowing. It's like plugging into plugging the computer as a terminal into a mainframe in which all of the computers of everybody are connected. And suddenly our knowing is beyond what we know. So it's no longer the mind connected with our physiology, which determines what we know, but it's our soul connected into the knowing of other people, which makes possible what we can know and what we in a way already have access to if we only go to that frequency of what people would call telepathy or intuition or inspiration or vision or prayer. There's so many different words for getting to know what you don't know by getting in touch with other people already know. And that also works through that frequency of love, resonance. And then in knowing that you don't know what others know, there is that other level of unfolding and unknowing that you realize that what people know is only what we know on Earth, but that there is also things outside of Earth which are knowable. So that is the essence of ignoscience, that when we look into what we do not know, we can look into our blind spots, we can look into our denials, which of course is fundamentally important, because people like the psychopath, they got locked up in their denials, in their blind spots. They operate from their blind spots in denials. They're fixated, they're highly energetic, highly focused, but also very limited. And when people tune into that, they become limited by it. So by looking into the blind spots, the psychopath can be healed. We can look into our own blind spots. We can look into our own denials. We can stop believing that what we know is all that there is to know. Because the blind spots are the turning points where we denied something which we could also know. And once we look into the blind spot, into the black spot, into the denial, and we open it up, which can be a traumatic experience because it was created in a moment of trauma and it reactivates the trauma. But once that is reactivated, then that was hidden in the denial becomes accessible again, opened up again, and a new bit of knowledge becomes accessible again, and the knowledge expands. And so by diving into all of these blind spots and all of these denials, also the denials of science, because these are the denials of the collective denials of scientists, we can unfold more and more of the limitations of our knowledge, or the limitation by our knowledge, and can unfold into the much larger realization. So that is where we then end up accessing more and more of the unknown by realizing that the known shall not be the limitation to what we can know. And it's impressive that in our body we have all these blind spots, but the blind spots are connected on the one side with the denials, which can lead to fixations in the body, which can lead to diseases such as cancer. But the other part is that these blind spots are also places of undefinedness. When we go into that, we can redefine. And that's actually connected to the way in our body we have freedom of choice, which is a quantum flip. The freedom of choice then connects to an interface, which is, say, the shockwave at the quantum level, where we have an interface where we can polarize or depolarize, which is what the nervous system and the hormonal system are doing. Then once we have created this polarity shift at the interface, we can define a domain or an interface within us, which is a space of ambiguity, or the counterpart, the space of a conviction, the space of a belief, so that we can explore a specific kind of knowledge and zoom in on that, put it on the microscope of our life experience. And those are then the beliefs, the convictions, also the blind spots, also the denials, because by focusing on that, we cannot focus on something else. And when we realize that that is the case, these spaces of ambiguity, we can redefine, we can redo a decision, we can undo a conviction and come to a new understanding and meet different people which have that different understanding. And so by doing that, we step into a different reality, because we have a different realization, because we have a different knowledge, because we redefined our knowledge by letting go of the fixation of our knowledge, the idée fixe, which is identified with the reflexes, the reflex behavior, the behavior based on conflicts, convictions, and resulting in conflicts. And so then we can see that the realm of fixed knowledge actually tends to lead to conflicts, while the realm of knowing is much more flexible and much more interested and much more capable to learn, which if you shift that back to the level of not knowing and realizing that the knowing comes from not knowing, and that leads to the curiosity, the interest, the discovery, let's say the real science, the true science, the discovery of the unknown, and that then connects back to the knowing of the unknown, that the foundation of science is that we do not know, that everything that we do know is simply like a collection of butterflies in a box of our mind. Those are fixated thoughts in our mind, which are no longer connected to what we can think or how we can think. And then ignoscience, the science of ignorance and the science of innocence, leads us back to the foundation of science. We just don't know what we know. The axioms which we pin everything to are actually unfounded. If we cannot deny them, we cannot affirm them either. They're just a belief. And that's okay if you realize that our reflexes are based on beliefs and convictions, and our convictions are based on decisions. Then at the moment that we know that the axioms of science are simply decisions that we took, but they're just possible decisions. There are other decisions we could take, and every culture took other decisions. And together we can see that all of us are wrong, which means that all of us are right, because together we can see more than what we see. It's just that to get to see what the other sees, we need to let go of our conviction, and for the moment, just by love and by acceptance, allow for the vision or the knowledge of the other to be true too. And then when you can realize that what you first thought to be false, when you assume that to be true, something that you held to be true from that other perspective proves to be false, and then by holding two opposite truths together, you realize that both of them are false, but both of them give you access to something which is much deeper and much more fundamental, and that you can then go to a much deeper level of consciousness, to a much deeper level of understanding, with the capacity to know much more than you knew. But you needed to first let go of your conviction that what you knew was right. And so by accepting the opposite view of the others, you can then dissolve the knowledge into the knowing, go from the knowing to the unknowing, and from the knowing to the out of knowing, to the realization that the unknown becomes knowable by the way that you interact with it, the way you interface with it, by the way you choose to connect to it, by the way you decide to decide on it. And that is where we then navigate consciousness. So ignoscience, on the one hand, shows that science doesn't know what it knows. On the other hand, it shows if we don't know what we know, then we have no foundation for our knowledge. On the third side, it says, well, if that is the case, then we need to look at what we don't know and how we don't know, because that shows how we get to know. And then at the fourth level, it shows that our knowledge is actually based on a process of getting to know, which we experience as a baby. And that is also where we can then connect to the unknowable, which essentially means that we have moved from body to mind to soul to spirit by going from the known to the knowing, to the knowing of the unknown, to the unknowable, and realizing that it all starts with the unknowable of everything that is as it is, which in tetrionics we would simply call the quantum field of quantum fluctuation, which is the dynamic of universal information, which is the foundation of creation, which is the foundation of what science looks for. So I'll just leave the story at that, because that essentially is the conclusion, that if you look into the unknown and into the unknowable and into the unknowables, then it will lead you into what knowing is really all about. Thank you.